Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And today we have a delightful guest, and we're going to be talking about spirit and soul power, not just mind power. We're an entire package. We're mind, body, spirit, and emotions. And many times we need to nourish those various aspects of ourselves separately. But when we can come together with a package of thought put in written form, it allows us, I think, to dip into the deeper wells of ourselves so that we can pull up and out of ourselves that which we really get to become acquainted with. I like to call it the true self. My guest today, J.D. Messenger, is the former CEO of Ernst & Young Consulting. This is out of Singapore. We're going to be talking with a man who is a world traveler. He also graduated from Annapolis. He's been involved as a fireman, a nuclear submarine officer. He also has done radio and television, created programs, both as a producer as well as a host. He helped to supervise the Valdez oil spill cleanup and works as an advisor to Fortune 500 companies. Mr. Messenger, J.D., you're a man that has quite an interesting and eclectic background.
I've never decided what I wanted to be when I grow up.
Oh, I think that's marvelous. That's an inspiration to anybody. You don't have to put a label on yourself. I was just thinking this morning, how many times do we put labels on ourselves and we have it attached with super glue? And really what we want are the non-stick labels, so we can remove them and attach a new one if we decide to, or even not even use labels at all. But in communication, labels seem to be very, very important because they paint pictures in our minds. Albert Einstein, you quoting on, or in the right at the beginning of your book, I want to know God's thoughts. The rest are details. Why did you choose that quote?
Well, I had this poster hanging on my wall for probably 10 years, and you know that was. You know, it's a picture with his frizzy hair and that quote beneath it. And the reason that was there was because I really wanted to know God's thoughts. I mean, I wanted to know who am I and why am I here and where I come from and why do things work and why do people fight and, you know, what are these illusions and, you know, the big questions of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made me tick.
Now, there had to have been a trigger for this, because so many times as we're going through life, we step into our little box that's got a nice handy-dandy label on it, like I'm a musician, or I'm a chef, or I'm 6 years old, or I am this, I am that, I am the other. What was it that happened to you in the year 2000 that all of a sudden made
yeah.
you split apart the cocoon you had encased yourself in? Why were you daring to do that?
Well, I sometimes wonder whether I had anything to do with it or not, whether it was my choice. That's a deep question in it of itself. I broke my neck, and it was the result of a submarine accident from 1985 where my neck had gotten smashed. And then it slowly deteriorated from 85 to 2000. And so when I had been in a lot of pain from, say, June of 99, and I started taking pain pills. Now, at the time, I'm the CEO of Ernst & Young in Singapore. I just got promoted to be the CEO of Southeast Asia, and I'm doing all these important things, working for all these important people, doing the largest mergers, and, you know, I'm an important person, Donna.
Oh, cool. Oh, I love that label. I
yeah.
am an
I'm
important,
an important person.
Person. Great.
Yes. And I put my arms in the air in the morning of January 18th to stretch, and the last thing that was holding my neck together popped, And so, you know, basically it shattered my vertebrae, my spinal column, and it twisted my my spinal column around, and it felt like I was getting split in half by an axe. Mm. And I, all of a sudden, I was out of my body. I was an observer. The part of me which has no mind, no physical presence, was watching my physical body get unplugged like a rag doll, and it just collapsed and flopped onto the nightstand and then flopped onto the floor. And then I went through a tunnel. It's like a kid going through a water slide park. It was a beautiful blue twisting tube like Jodie Foster in that movie Contact, if you ever saw it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I call it a wormhole, and it was beautiful sparklers and everything. So that was the genesis, because, you know, I essentially died and went through this tunnel and experienced these things, and that's a very short beginning, short answer to your question. When I came back, I had many, many different things happen to me. I watched my hand write, not knowing what was coming out of it. I spoke languages I didn't know. I knew of events that were going to happen before they happened. So just your everyday run-of-the-mill metaphysical stuff that was driving this left-brain nuclear engineer CEO crazy.
You pose a wonderful positioning. And I say it's wonderful because when life has a tendency to slap us upside the head, in your case it was your neck, and you go through this experience, you come back into quote unquote the real world and you go, this isn't, how do I bring these together? And for so many people that have had experiences like this, there is an adjustment time. They often realize that there's something bigger than themselves. It's an operation, which I like to call God, energy, whatever term someone's comfortable with. I don't care what they use. But here you are with all of this. Did your left brain go into argument with the right?
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Experience.
Oh, it wasn't an argument. It was a full-fledged nuclear war. I mean, that sort of comes out in the book 11 Days in May, which, as you know, is 36 short discussions between me and an unnamed friend. But I was a real hard case to crack. You know, the 12 years of physics and metallurgy and chemistry and reactor kinetics and, you know, all kinds of process and systems, you know, very, very strong left brain. And these things didn't compute. And I had to go on a search to take the essence of science and convince myself that the spiritual phenomenon were, in fact, very real. I like to say there's a science called religion and a religion called science, but they're one and the same. You know, as you know, metaphysics is, people think metaphysics is beneath or below physics or science, when in fact it is the highest structure of all knowledge. For the people that are in information systems and business, in a company, we call it our metadata. You know, our supplier data, our shopping data, our procurement data. Well, we have a metadata model in companies, and so does the universe. It has a metadata model. And that's why, you know, people that study physics and go down to the subatomic level and string theory and all that come up with theories that are inconsistent with Einstein's theories. And that's, you know, and so on. You know, we break all of these knowledges down into psychology and physiology, and we miss the big picture. And, you know, the big picture is that everything is energy, which is light, which is photons. And I'm a light being, and I live in the world of light, and 99% of it we don't see.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I just love it when I hear someone like yourself saying, we are light. And I go, I wonder if they put you into Western State Hospital up here if you said that too, Emily. But I really find, I find that this is so delightful. I really do. Because in my understanding and in my observation, to me, life is such a magnificent experience. I'm out picking blackberries yesterday, and I'm just going, how does it do that? How does it get all of these tiny little nodules into this one little berry, and everything's contained, it's got a cellular memory, it's got a mind of its own, it knows exactly what it's supposed to do, and when you look at the berry bush, everything comes in different sizes, shapes, and even color can be different. And I just love this. And it just blows right out of the water, I think, so much of the pomposity that people in the scientific area will want to label themselves with. I'll use that delightful five-letter word, label. It is something that once you get past that, it's so liberating, but it's often hard to put into words. And that's where your book, The 11 Days in May, there is this conversation that you have with what you call your friend. And I have a friend, in fact, who that's what she describes the communication. She's a trans medium. And she's always called this energy that speaks through her or comes through her a friend. She never gave it a name. It was always friend. And I understood that totally because it's actually multiple levels of consciousness that can communicate. Now, when you started writing this out, now you made the comment, and when you started writing what the transmissions of information were, oh, that sounds so dramatic, doesn't it?
Yes.
You're getting these downloads.
Yes.
And you said your hand was writing, but your brain was saying, oh boy, this is it. Did you think about checking yourself into a mental institution for a while to see if you were really sane?
No, this book came out 12 years after I broke my neck. So I had 12 years of integration.
Uh-huh.
And I was aware, I mean, one of the things that happens to me is I call it writing on the wall or WOW. I ask a question or I meditate and I get an answer. And sometimes, you know, it's a flash, it's an inspiration or an insight, but other time it's literally words written on the wall. And so this book started off that way. And I didn't know I was writing a book. I had no intention of writing a book. There was no title, no structure, no objectives. I just asked these questions, and what I wrote in day one was, what is day one parables? And day two was day two parables. I mean, the book literally wrote itself in 11 days, and I never knew more than five words at a time. And mm-hmm. So I would type what was there, and I would ask a question, and then I would type back, and sometimes I liked what this conversation was saying, and other times I was pretty angry. And, you know, there's sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's there's hostility, and there's crying, and it's profound. You know, I mean, this mm-hmm. was a, you know, you are there kind of thing.
And I think it's wonderful. Let's take the very first question that's in your book. What is a thought? Thoughts going through a head all the time. What caused you to ask this question?
Well, I don't know what caused me to ask that question. I actually don't know what caused me to ask any of the questions other than, I will say, divine inspiration. I mean, I remember a couple of the other questions are, what is love, what is war, what is sex? And when I typed those questions, I couldn't believe that I was possibly going to be talking about love, war, and sex. Our thoughts, the reason that one is first or early on, I actually think it might be the second. Who makes things might be the first one, and what is a thought, the second one. But the essence of everything that we are is energy, and everything is energy in motion, which in essence are thoughts. Everything is held together with these binding forces. You know that nothing is solid. I mean, matter being solid is an illusion. It's just binding forces. And our thoughts, I'll put it to you this way, the thing sitting on our shoulders is the most powerful supercomputer in the world. It's more powerful than, you know, a million Cray computers. It's more billions of times more powerful than your iPhone. and your iPhone is sending and receiving documents, right? Mm-hmm. And so your iPhone's got or smartphone has a unique ID and email, and so do you. And, you know, once you understand that thoughts are pure energy and they respond to natural laws, and we set up filters in our brain, like on my submarine, if I was underwater listening to the snapping shrimp and singing whales, I'd get a little irritated. So I put in a filter and block those so that I could hear the Russian submarine during the Cold War, 1980s and 85. So we do the same thing. We put in filters, and those filters are intentions and motivations. So, you know, understanding the essence of thoughts and how intentions and motivations come into play and how our brain works helps us begin to understand how we co-create, how we can heal, how we transmit thoughts between each other. We're collective thought-sharing machines. Excuse me.
Pain is something none of us like. We are all going to experience it on one level or another. Confusion can come with pain. You ask the question, pain, suffering, and confusion. Why? What is the purpose? How do we deal with it? These were all things that you addressed. Now, you had gone through this out-of-body experience because you were in a life-threatening happening, excruciating pain. Your whole nervous system responded. You basically were dead. You pop out of the body, and you're consciously aware of this entire process. You bring this back. When you ask this question, what was the most profound understanding that you got from it?
The most profound. I think the most profound, one of the most profound questions in the book is, what is war, and what is love, and what is sex? And the interesting thing is that they're like the three great prime movers, and they're all manifestations of the mind, except for love, which is the greatest force. But war, the thing that stands out at me when you ask that question is that the statement that war is the outer manifestation of inner turmoil. And I've shared that with some people, and they really don't get it. And other people are like, oh my God, yes. You know, that all war, all relationship challenges, all jealousy, lust, all these things, are personal manifestations, issues and challenges in our own mind that we project outward. And then even when, you know, you become a person of great personal power and institutional power, and you've got these great problems inside you, then you turn war into a huge physical war. So, I think that's incredibly profound, that war is the outer manifestation of inner turmoil. And then how these are related to sex and love.
You have the question, what is truth? And one of the responses that you had to this is, what you think is true is most important. And then the statement, and in fact, you say you don't see the difference, because your question is, what others think is true is not important. And they said, no, what you think is true is more important. You said you didn't see the difference, and the response was, there's a huge difference, and maybe you should spend some time in silence and figure it out for yourself. That was one of the themes of the conversation that was very consistent.
Yeah.
Thinking for yourself. Now, this is not something we are taught. We're not supposed to think for ourselves. Because if we think for ourselves, that means we're going to march to a different drummer. And here you are, an extremely successful, brilliant man, and you're going, wait a minute, aren't you supposed to give me all of the answers? And then you're told, no, you've got to think for yourself. Now, this doesn't go according to the typical guru book of life. as we perceive it sometimes to be. How did this affect you?
How did it what?
Affect you.
Well, one of the interesting things is that that parable was initially totally blank. I mean, the question is, what is truth? And then when you flip to it, it was literally blank. The publishers kept taking out the blank pages. It was intentionally supposed to be two blank pages, if you think about it. And so every time they kept setting the print, they kept taking. I'm like, no, will you stop taking? Those are supposed to be blank pages. And so we put in those few words to make the point. And I just crack up laughing, it's like the car accident story. You have 10 people watch an accident, and you'll get 8 different answers on what they saw. And the truth to them is dependent upon their point of view, where they were standing, their eyesight, perhaps their ability to understand math, speed, and distance, their racial prejudices or lack of racial, biases, whether they're a man or a woman, and whether the police officer or the person, was Mexican or Hispanic or just Republican and Democrat, what's the weather like today? Did you have a fight this morning? I mean, it goes on and on and on. And all of these things become a part of our supercomputer and filters on how we are sensing and receiving reality. And the idea that anyone can tell you what the truth is, or tell you what the purpose of life is, these are all illusions. The greatest sort of irony of all of the great masters is that they all said that you are your own master.
Mm-hmm.
And we call them masters, I just think that's so funny. And that is when you can begin to laugh at that, the idea that, all of these things, like you said, labels, they're all, I call them flops, faulty, limited, and outdated programs that convince us that death is the end, that time only goes in one direction forward, that matter is solid, that you can't be a world first creator, innovator, or whatever it is. I mean, they're all just limiting and faulty and outdated beliefs. I mean, we have unlimited potential to do and be whatever it is we choose to be.
There was a sentence in your book that brought to mind old kahuna ways of Hawaii. And the sentence was, and it was spoken to you, you sabotaged yourself so that you could escape an environment you didn't want to be in. You did it twice. And this was in reference to the section that you wrote on pain. And in the kahunas, in the old ways, when someone would come to a kahuna, they'd ask the question, what is eating at you? And I always thought that was such a profound question. What is eating at you? And when I read your sentence there, I thought I'd ask you the question. What was eating at you where you sabotaged yourself twice with this physical condition?
Oh, what was eating at me was the great illusion of our time that is destroying our country and planet, that the idea that the holy grail of life is something that you can buy, sell, or hold, that we are consumers, not citizens or souls, that who we are is what we do and what we own, and that life is a destination called retirement, living is our purpose is to retire. I mean, what was eating at me was that I was caught in this matrix that this game where I'm supposed to work and make more money and buy more things and work harder to make more money and buy more things. And, this world of desire and attachments, and it was killing me.
And yet someone on the outside would have thought, oh, I wish I could do what he does. I wish
Everybody
I
says that,
do.
Yeah.
Yes, oh,
yeah. Oh, look
my
at all
goodness.
Those things you've done, yeah.
Yes, isn't this marvelous? You are so lucky.
Oh, I was so important, remember? Remember, I was important.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. That's the label. You were important. Okay,
yes.
You were important.
Yes.
Three words. And then you really got a swift kick by the universe's wisdom. One of the, and I know we are coming to a close with our conversation, which has been delightful. One of the statements that you make, which I really, really like, is that we know that God does not have a watch. It is time to tackle the relevance of time itself. God does not have a watch. And I thought, this is so wonderful, because it just makes a shift in the thinking where you have an expansiveness, where you realize that there's so much more to life than just what you have discussed. And you go into time relevancy. So many wonderful, wonderful questions. And what I thought was so profound was that the latter part of your book, you said you felt it was your own soul that was talking to you. And I thought that was so profound, because nothing is separate. We're all connected. And this magnificence of life is so awesome. But you had this awakening, and your book, 11 Days in May, states it so well. But you said you were talking to the part of yourself that can tap into the source of all knowledge and wisdom. Every life you've lived, every thought that is shared, every pain that is or has been felt, and that anyone can do the same thing, but you don't have to go through an out-of-body experience. You can do it without going through excruciating pain, but it is something you can do. And I just love that, because that's what I believe. That's what I feel, and it's an individual journey.
Thank you so much for your kind words. Pardon me?
How has this journey empowered you? What is the biggest shift, if there can be a label of the biggest shift? Well, what would you say this has done to benefit your life? I know I'm asking a bunch of questions, but if you could put it in a little capsule for me.
Yeah, I would say that when you can find that space, there is a great sense of relief. You know, the shoulders go down, you take a deep breath, you are relaxed, you're alive, you're happy, you're joyful. You know, you all of a sudden realize, you know, you know, I don't really have to go rush to the sale today because I don't need to buy anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or look at I'm looking at a beautiful flower, a bird of paradise, which are just amazing flowers, if you know the bird of paradise, you know?
Yes, I do.
And the wind blowing a little fan that's pink and yellow and making a, you know, it's, you know, we're just so caught up in this rat race and, you know, thinking, you know, we got to work hard and do things we don't like. And then you got to take a pill and to wake up and a pill to go to sleep and a pill to cure this disease or whatever. And, you know, it's just all not true. You know, it's all not true. And so just at ease, you know, I'm just sitting here listening to what you're saying, grateful and looking at the sun, and I'm feeling good. You know, that's
being
the benefit.
In the now. Being in the now. Just appreciating what you have right now, right here. And when you think about it, with this wonderful aspect of technology, with this goes around the world, we're able to share thoughts, feelings, emotions, your experience. And I love three words that you have in the epilogue of your book. Suffering is optional. And I think that that is something that, again, that there is a label established. You must go through this. No, it's not necessary. But sometimes I think we do have to have certain experiences because we've decided that that is part of our programming. That's part of necessity. And it's a pretty tough thing sometimes to let go of those labels because, for some reason, they've given us a sense of security because that is what the society around us may deem as being necessary. But as individuals, we don't have to get stuck there.
And well, those labels are our identity.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you start taking apart or chipping away at any of those labels, you have an identity crisis or what's that psychological term? Cognitive dissonance, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. That's, you know, when that starts to happen, I actually think you're starting to wake up.
Oh, I think it's marvelous. It really is. And that in and of itself can be unsettling, but oh, isn't it exciting? Because life is an adventure. And the discovery that you went through with 11 days in May. Now, I neglected to ask you about a website. What is your website?
It's jvmessenger.com.
And Messenger is spelled M-E-S-S-I-N-G-E-R.
Right. Yep. And you can learn about the book there, and it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places.
Well, J.D., I really think that this book is just loaded with a lot of wonderful, insightful information. And your conversation with your soul self, I think, has a lot of depth to it. But it's a very, very good read. So for those of you that are listening, if you are asking certain questions like we have brought up today, it wouldn't hurt. Add this to your library. And it's a type of book you can go back to. 11 Days in May. J.D. Messenger has been my guest. And it's been a delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760. Or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. I'm delighted that you are sharing this time with me, and of course, telephone lines are now open. And if you would like to chat with me, well, I would be delighted to share my skills and talents with you of the mind. Give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want to share with you the lineup for this week. We have got some wonderful guests. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Pam Withers, Jumpstarting Boys. My goodness, I don't know of a teacher that I've ever met that has not made a statement. Where do boys get all this energy? My goodness, girls, you can tell them to sit still, but the boys, they're always bouncing around like ping pong balls. Well, Pam has a wonderful book about raising kids, especially boys, so that you're comfortable and are not trying to make them into something that they're not. Also, we're going to be talking about bird medicine. Now, Evan Pritchard is a man who has dealt with different cultures and understanding the connection that we have with our feathered friends and the significance of them within different cultures. And then the Powering Up Health, Dr. Wiley, is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about physical fitness and things that you can do to empower your own wellness. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about a dog that heals. The dog's name is Tassel. Rosemary Stevenson is going to be my guest. And, oh, this is one very special dog. Of course, I think all animals are special anyway. But this dog came into this life experience to do healing and making a difference in people's lives in a very special way. So all of that is coming up. And, yes, the list will be up regarding my guests. It didn't go up on time this month, but it will be going up, so you will have that within a short period of time. So you'll know about the people coming in to the Donna Sebo Show. People's lives are always inspiring to me. I can remember when I was a small girl, when my dad used to drive around various places where there were new housing developments going up, it was always fascinating to look at the different structures, to look at the layouts. I'm not talking about track housing. I'm talking about going into environments where design and creativity was employed. And every house was painted differently, and every environment of each house had its own unique personality to it. That's how I describe it. And I was always intrigued with that. And I'd often think, I wonder what goes on in people's lives. Well, sometimes I have had the opportunity, actually frequently, being a counselor and a minister, to really find out a little bit about what goes on in people's lives. And I find the diversity is fascinating. And I wanted to share a story with you about a man who had a vision, a dream for something. And his name, well, his name is Pearl. Can you imagine that? That's right. That's what his name is. He's a man that had a dream that he never, ever thought he would see realized. And today, it has actually happened. So I wanted to share that with you. But again, I'm going to give out the number 888-627-6008. With radio, we're always talking and describing things to you. Unlike television, words have to have the power to convey pictures and images so that you can understand the message. Well, paintings in caves have left messages for us, and often archaeologists are tantalized by the pictures they see. They try to decipher them. And so many times, I think they miss the message. But they do try to figure out what they represent. And you know what? There are so many of the messages that are conveyed that when we finally do figure it out, we realize that the people that existed maybe millennia ago had very much the same concerns that we had. In northern Spain, there are some phenomenal recorded paintings, and actually many of them we would consider works of art today. They would be in our museums, and many of them actually have been transposed into museum displays of one type or another. But language itself needs grammar. And the question came up, how can an organized arrangement of pictures be precise and subtle enough to convey metaphor? Well, what would you say if there was a picture of a half moon, a stick figure, a building structure like a house, a cave, a bed, and then what we would call like a cartoon image of a cloud. Maybe inside that cloud is the head of a snake with its tongue sticking out. Would you say at night a person goes home to bed and dreams of snake? Or would you say after cutting his or her nails, a person goes into a house but can't get to sleep because the thought of snakes keeps him or her awake? What they found is just what I said a moment ago, is that often people read into pictures what they want to read into them. And think about reading. How many cultures read from right to left? Here in America and in the English-speaking languages, we go from right to left. It's all a matter of interpretation, isn't it? So the use of pictures is something that has been utilized over and over again, and we see it every day in our life. Advertising. If you study advertising, they understand the effects of color, image, form, movement. What are you trying to convey? What images are you wanting to plant into someone's mind? Words do the same thing. And that's why words are often thought of being extremely powerful. If you call someone stupid, what's the image that comes into your head? When you hear that word, is it a word you internalize? Do you accept it? Or do you just know the word is a word and you don't buy in to someone else's label that they're going to put on you? Words are fascinating things. And I know how much they have affected my life. And of course, that's what my work is, conveying in communication through the power of words what we want to share with you. So when they go through the history of art, they find that there can be a lot of interpretation to what we see. It is conveyed by what our experiences have been and our particular paradigms of perception. And when we're open and we're willing to learn, we may find that our paradigms can change, all dependent upon who, what, and where we are participating, what environments we're participating in. And that's why it's always good to expand your mind and your experience by living with expectation and joy of knowing that somewhere you may have something that's going to completely change your awareness of life, just like my guest today. Can you imagine someone that has all of this rock-solid education and indoctrination and then all of a sudden being slam-dunked and going, whoa, I'm having experiences that in a million years, if someone told me this is what I was going to go through, I would have denied it emphatically. And yet it's transformed his life. And it's transformed his life in a phenomenal way. That happens so many times in so many different ways. And I wanted to share the story with you about a gentleman. And he is just, he's just such a nice guy. He really is. And he became a part of something called the Garden Club in his town. And there was a person that was coming out to make an evaluation of his garden. And, he had all kinds of thoughts running through his mind. Well, they're probably going to think it's sort of silly. And I finally, when she came up to the door and knocked on his door, and he introduced himself to her and shook her hand, he said, "Can I show you around?" And she said, "Yes, would you please?" Well, it wasn't just his front yard. We're talking about 3 acres. Well, fortunately, this lady had her good walking shoes on because he took her to every corner of those 3 acres. It was the first land he had ever owned, and he said it was significant for him because he was the son of sharecroppers, went many generations back. And he posed a question. He said, "Who would ever think I'd want to be working on the land?" He had memories of working in hot sun, shirt dripping with sweat, when he was doing it when he was younger. "I don't want to grow things anymore. That's servitude he just didn't want any part of." Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to tell you the story of a man not only changed his mind, but achieved his dream. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Pearl Fryer is a man who went through a series of experiences in his life. As I told you, there was a woman that was coming to visit him to see his 3 acres of garden. But there's something behind this story that I wanted to share with you. He said what changed his life and his thinking was when he was in the military service and he was in Korea. And he said when he was there, he had developed a friendship with a Korean, and the Koreans loved their gardens. In the Asian culture, gardens mean so much. It's a place of sanctuary. It's something that there is a style and a beauty that they want with their gardens. Well, he went to this old city, and in the city, his Korean friend said, "You must see these gardens." And he said the garden that he saw just took his breath away. Everywhere you looked, there was something beautiful. They had ponds. And he thought to himself, I wonder if I could ever do something like this. Started with a question. Now, of course, his mind, his logical self came in and said, oh, this is ridiculous. This is outrageous. Nobody in my family has ever owned a piece of land, much less even had a talent for developing something this exquisite. It wasn't practical. Doing a garden was not a practical thing. So, this is a practical man. He had had a tough life. He had worked hard. He got married, had traveled, gotten involved with manufacturing. Until one day, he and his wife, after many years, finally bought a piece of land. And when he got that piece of land, now, this guy was working 12-hour days. He got acquainted with his local nursery. And he said every time he'd be in the nursery, it's like the plants talked to him. So he'd pick them up, buy them, and then go out onto his property. His mind started doing something very interesting. His mind started looking at these little bushes and these little trees. And he'd start thinking, I wonder if I could do something with it. I wonder if I can transform them into something beautiful. And so, little by little, he would tend these bushes, these trees. And then he'd go back to the nursery. He'd check their inventory. So, do you have anything you're just throwing away? Something that just isn't responding, that isn't growing very well? Now, he set up lights in this acreage that he had so he could work on the plants at night. Yes, you're hearing that correctly. He'd go out. He worked 12-hour days. He'd go out into this acreage, these 3 acres, with these plants. And every time he went out, he had his clippers and he had twine. Now, he heard a term called topiary. This was something that was really new to him, and so he started studying and researching it. And he said he wanted his plants to grow the way they wanted to grow, but he just wanted to shape them and sculpt them. So he started working with his garden. And I have in front of me a photo of his 500 trees and shrubs. There's 3 acres, 500 trees and shrubs that just have been transformed. Now, people started seeing and noticing, of course, as the years went by, what was happening and these beautiful designs that he was coming up with. He was an artist. He was a gardening artist, and he thought to himself when he'd see articles on gardening, he'd say, oh, wouldn't that be nice if I got the yard of the month? That would really be nice. But, of course, he didn't believe it could happen. He said his garden was a joy for him, 3 acres worth. He said, I was contented. This was the way he communicated with life. Well, the lady that came out to see him had an evaluation sheet, was going through all kinds of stuff. She ends up leaving. And then, all of a sudden, one morning, he sees this lady out in his front yard area, and she's carrying a sign, and she's got a hammer. The next thing he knows, she's pounding the stick that's attached to the sign into his yard. He was stunned. He couldn't believe what was on the sign. He had been declared the yard of the month. Now, this was a few years ago. Do you know that today more than 10,000 people go to visit Pearl Fryer's garden every year? He's ended up being written putting into articles in magazines. There's a calendar that's been made displaying the beauty of his garden, and even an award-winning documentary was made. He said, my garden will never be finished, and it's a joy for him. He's quote-unquote retired now, but his full-time job is taking care of over 500 trees and shrubs that bring joy and delight to the people that come into his garden. A dream that came out of nowhere, a concept, an idea, stimulated by something he saw in Korea so many years ago. Today is not just a passion for him, but it is allowing him to share his space with thousands and thousands of people, inspiring them just like he was inspired. You see, you never know where you are going to get that drop of inspiration, that something that is going to tell you that you have a very special gift inside of you to contribute to this world. All of Pearl's experience and his understanding of who he was and where he came from and his history and what he had lived through, it really wasn't him. What really is Pearl is this creative master, call it a genius if you will, of communicating with plants just like Luther Burbank did. And we know Luther Burbank made the potatoes. This gentleman brings beauty and form into plants many times that would have been thrown away. And today, grace and thrill and delight, 3 acres filled with a diversity and a beauty that feed the soul, the heart, and the mind. You, too, have something special within you. Be open to it like Pearl was. Don't be afraid to explore it, because it may just bring into your life, oh, so much more than you could ever have imagined. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Not somebody else's job to pay attention. It's your job. Take this day of life, live it, savor it. It's a cocktail that you're meant to imbibe that is going to lighten up your life with more than just insight. God bless. Have a great day. We'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.